Good morning, and welcome back to your morning conversation here on KXCV Karen W. I'm your host, Jeremy Werner. Joining me this morning is pianist and singer Eric Eve Garcia, who will be performing in Brownville this weekend as part of the Brownville Concert Series. Eric, thank you for joining me this morning before your big performances this weekend. First question I have for you is, you know, simply put, what is it that got you started on this path of becoming a world-renowned pianist and singer?
My mom is musical. She had played a lot of classical in her own childhood and early adulthood, and we had a piano at home. I always gravitated towards it. It was something that I just kind of naturally sought out, found fascinating, found frustrating, but kept going back to. I had lessons at home, classical lessons for many years, and then I stopped taking lessons around the time I went to college, and I went to college for theater, dramatic theater here in New York, but kept playing on my own, and then I would, you know, run around around town here and Philly, actually, on auditions, but I needed work, obviously, and so I had the idea of, well, maybe for a little bit, I'll go and pick up some gigs, you know, in a bar or a couple of restaurants or bars, you know, any place that would take me, to make extra money at night at the end of those audition days. And that's kind of what I did, but it was the thing that gained traction. It was the thing that all of a sudden people started noticing me for instead of what I was trying to do during the day. And then singing... I started singing because the gentleman I was working for wanted a pianist who sang at the same time. And a guy breezed in fresh off a cruise ship as a singer-pianist. And my then boss said to me, he can play and sing at the same time. And if by the time you finish that cup of coffee, you aren't singing while you play, then you can go home and he can finish your shift. So I started singing. It was kind of by necessity, actually. I couldn't afford to lose my job. But then, amazingly, it just kind of became an incredible thing that's permitted me to travel and perform for people. And, of course, it's very dear to me. So
what kind of inspiration and what kind of idols did you have growing up with the piano?
Well, I've got to say, since I grew up, mostly, anyway, in the New York area, or about 45 minutes south of here, in central coastal New Jersey. I grew up in kind of beach communities down there, mostly, anyway. You know, it was kind of Sinatra country. You know, I mean, you would hear him on the radio a lot. I always felt Frank Sinatra was the voice, particularly on Sundays. You know, he would just be on the radio. You would hear him in other rooms in the house. I mean, it was kind of like a familiar voice that was almost like a family voice. Do you know what I mean? He was just kind of present all the time. One of those voices, as I'm sure a lot of people feel about Elvis or a certain number of other singers. But so I guess he was a big one just by virtue of the fact that I think... he was kind of an entry to me for certainly a lot of composers, Cole Porter and Gershwin and Johnny Mercer and Harold Arlen and a lot of things like that. But in terms of playing, the first album, and actually it was one of the things that inspired the show that I'm coming to Nebraska, to Brownville, to the concert series to perform, Keeper of the Keys, the first album I ever bought with my own money, as a kid, a CD, it wasn't vinyl, although I do have it in vinyl now, just because I wanted to, is a Nat Cole album called A Penthouse Serenade. I knew nothing about it. And it's just him playing. A lot of people may not realize this, or many people might, or they may know it but not have heard him. But Nat Cole, in addition to being one of the just most effortless, pure joyous, warm singers, I think, ever, and certainly an enormous inspiration to me. I love his singing. He was a genius piano player. He had the hottest trio on the road in his day, before he became much more known for being a star, a popular singer who stood at a microphone in front of an orchestra. That was an enormous transition for him. So I would say people like Sinatra and Nat King Cole, certainly I'm an enormous Oscar Peterson fan. As a player, I think that man is some sort of wizard. I think he's got concealed fingers and some sort of mystical power. but certainly people like that, Bill Evans, my God. And even classical players, you know, I do miss playing classical music. I try to go listen to it live or listen to it at home as often as I can. And one of these days I'm going to get up the courage to start playing classical at home again, and not worry that I can't play at the age I am now something I played when I was 8.
So your show's called Keeper of the Keys, and you'll be performing music by a lot of different musicians, including Nat King Cole. My question is, how do you select which songs? What's the process behind your song selection? Because you do have to pull from all these different musicians that you're paying homage to.
Yeah. So as you say, Keeper of the Keys pays tribute to what I would consider a sort of pantheon of legendary great singer pianists, but also ones that I think are emblematic of their age, certainly stylistically of their age, and ones that just I admire hugely, and I can and do listen to them frequently, but there's always more material I find in there. So it's Nat King Cole, Hoagy Carmichael, of course, which, you know, I mean, he wrote Stardust and he wrote, you know, Skylark and Two Sleepy People. Bobby Short, of course, the great legend of the Carlisle for nearly 40 years. And also for this show, just because I admire both these ladies enormously, but I really felt that we needed more women represented in this show. So I am very, very excited to add, this is a unique expansion of the show for me. So it's Blossom Dearie, who's from upstate New York, and who really fused jazz and what we would today call cabaret, or what at one point was either called nightclub or supper club, and today we call cabaret. But she really fused the worlds of jazz and cabaret in a way that most didn't. It was either jazz or kind of that other sound, sort of the difference between Nat Cole or Bobby Short, for example. And the other is Shirley Horn, who was an absolutely genius player out of Washington, D.C. She had a spectacular ability to kind of, as one of her arrangers, the great arranger Johnny Mandel, said, it was like she had two brains. She could sing and play with such incredible specificity and vivacity, really, and invention and clarity. I picked the tunes that I think kind of represent them best. I mean, certainly with Nat Cole, you've got to do, you know, I touch on some of the stuff that he did with his trio. So, you know, there's Paper Moon, there's Straighten Up and Fly Right, which is, of course, a very, very famous song, but little known was a story his father, who I believe was a reverend, told in church on Sundays. It was a parable. And he wrote it. That's a Nat Cole tune, which until I started doing research for the show, I didn't know. But, you know, it's also, you know, for example, Leslie Hutchinson, who's not known in this country, really much more known in Britain. He was an enormous star. He came from Granada. You know, there was a song Cole Porter wrote about him where he called him a gigolo. And it's a wonderful song, but it's a bleak song. It's a fairly, it's a wonderful tune, but it's kind of, it represents a period of Hutchinson's life. So I try to make it representative of their careers, songs that I love, but also I'm in the process of unraveling a narrative about each of these people. And so that there is a kind of the flow of a story about it along the arc of their careers or as popular culture changed. And that's how I go about choosing them, I guess.
So not to say that the show is educational, because I think that takes away from the performance itself. But, it seems like you're incredibly knowledgeable, not only about the music, but these musicians. Do you provide perspective to help, guide the audience through all this music?
So there is a good deal of that. I really must say, though, and not to imply that that's what you're saying, but I would love listeners to realize that it's not a musicalized lecture. I think of it as a story. And I think of these composers, whether they're Gershwin, Hank Williams, whether they're Cole Porter, whether they're Dolly Parton, whether they're Duke Ellington, whether they're Kris Kristofferson, I'm interested in what paths they took into being who they are, what had them laying up at night, what inspired them, what made them who they were, how they generated what they created. I think, quote-unquote, American songbook has to be a fairly breathable, elastic term. It's a diverse musical legacy, and I think that anecdotes, they're stories, really. It's context. And anything that might have you hearing a song you've heard before, like Stardust, or like Mona Lisa, or a variety of different songs, anything that has you maybe tilting your head a little bit to the side once you hear how the song came about. What they might have intended, what they struggled with. It gives it a kind of a contour and a feeling that you might tilt your head to the side and say, I didn't realize that. I am passionate about this music and I do love doing the research, but I'm committed as best I can not to having them be museum pieces or a song that you hear in the background of a romantic movie. Or in a store when you're going shopping, they're not just that. I don't think they should be behind glass. I think that as truly as whatever inspired, Shakespeare was grieving the death of his son when he, instead of grieving fully with his family, decided to go write Merry Wives of Windsor. Now, knowing that, if I go see a production of Merry Wives of Windsor, I was like, well, that's what he was going through. That's what was happening in his life. Why'd he go do that? And the same, I think, is absolutely as true as Nat Cole or Bobby Short. What prompted a kid who was, 11 or 13 when he first performed at the Apollo in Harlem in New York City. And, he was about to quit show business when he got a 2-week gig engagement in the summer at the Carlisle Hotel when they decided to take this little room nobody was using. And they mostly served tea in it to some seniors who would just kind of sit around in there. And they put in a little cover charge and he started performing. And they just kept renewing him. And he was there for 38 years. And he was absolutely the Mount Olympus of cabaret performers. And that room was the absolute top anywhere. I can't help but think of that anytime I might go to walk by the Carlisle or go see a show in the cafe. So that's the kind of thing that lightly touched on the way to the tunes. It's not the whole show, but I really do try to keep it balanced and try to keep it vivid and fun. Anything that makes it breathe to me is exciting.
All right. Well, those are all the questions I have. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, it's been some years since I've been back. I've been twice, but I can't wait to be back. I truly can't. I've made friends out there. It is always a joy to play. And I'm hugely excited to put New York behind me for a couple of days. And I truly hope that people come and explore these fascinating people who were stuck behind a piano in a noisy bar and somehow won over the room and became these incredible figures in popular music.
All right. Well, once again, that is pianist and singer Eric Eve Garcia, who is performing this weekend in Brownville as a part of the Brownville Concert Series. His performances are at 7:30 tonight and tomorrow night, as well as Sunday at 2 p.m. Tickets are still available and can be found at brownvilleconcertseries.com. I'm Jeremy Werner, and this has been your Morning Conversation here on KXCV KRNW.